Blog Talk Radio.
This is Stuart Collins out in Florida, a volunteer. And Stuart, just give us a little bit of background on you, how you got interested in politics in general first.
I guess I really started getting into politics when I was a teenager. I got a summer job at my dad's factory, and after I was done working, I would sit in the car waiting for my dad, and I just would flip through the radio, and I ended up on our local talk station, and I think it was Sean Hannity at the time, and, you know, it resonated with me. You know, I was working these hours, and he was talking about the economy, and it made sense, and it started clicking to me, and I guess it's just grown over the years, and now that I'm in college at USF, I'm starting to, put my foot forward and get active in politics with the Convention of States.
So specifically, you mentioned Convention of States and the project.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about that on Sean Hannity's show, or was there some other thing that drew you into that?
It wasn't Sean Hannity. I guess through the years I've bounced around from Sean to Rush to Savage to Glenn, and I ended up on Mark Levin, and because I'm a history major, and Mark Levin talks a lot about history, so he really attracted me. And he talked about the Convention of States, and I got his book, The Liberty Amendments, and that's what really teed it off for me. It was, you know, he presented a solution for the people to fix the government and the problems that we're having. And, you know, there was the history, the legal background to back this up, and that's what really got me involved in it. And I guess in the last year is really when I started getting involved. You know, a lot of people had questions, and I just decided, you know, we need to inform people about this. We need to educate them, and that's kind of the role I've filled as a volunteer is, you know, mostly on social media, is answering a lot of the questions about, well, what is this? How does it work? And how are we doing? And that sort of stuff.
Terrific. So you heard about the Convention of States as a concept from Mark Levin first. Did you hear about the actual Convention of States project there? Because for a while he wasn't actually able to, until we had our radio ads running, he really wasn't able to say our website name. But obviously he referenced it quite a bit. Did you just go out then and Google and see where it was at?
Yeah, that's pretty much, I don't remember exactly, but, you know, his book kind of started me down the path, and I think somehow I ended up at the Convention of States Facebook page, and, you know, I would occasionally pop on there and see what was going on. And then, you know, when Florida got really active in 2014, that's when I started, I guess, really getting involved as well, was with the Florida application that passed and wanting to be involved in that, and, you know, contacting my representatives and then, like I said, educating people and my fellow citizens here in Florida.
So you mentioned Florida, and you mentioned you somehow got to the Facebook page and then got involved. Did we have district captains within the Convention of States Project, did you reach out to them? Did they reach out to you, get you plugged in, or did you just kind of take off on your own?
My district doesn't actually have a district captain. There's a couple districts around me because Tampa is a big metropolitan area, so our districts all are very close. But yeah, my district didn't have one, so I just kind of took off on my own. Like I said, I do a lot of more social media stuff on Twitter and Facebook and getting that information out to people across the country and keeping them tapped in. And that's really where I've kind of filled that niche, I guess, for the Convention of States project. And it really is being a full-time student as well as working. You know, I couldn't do everything all the time, so, you know, being a social, I guess some people call them social media warriors, you know, I could do it, you know, 5 minutes before class or, you know, an hour after I'm done studying. So that was really where I fit in was with the tech stuff and getting people informed.
Well, I know that's where I came across you is we had the flurry at the beginning of this year in 2015 when we had, you know, we were just counting them down there were handfuls the first week. We got into double digits real quick on filing our application, and there were a lot of questions. I know you followed the different states as they would post and their Facebook pages would post, and there was obviously a lot of enthusiasm from people who were watching saying, this has to happen, how many do we need? And people seemed to think that we were getting close to being done when we're really just starting it. And there was a lot of education, and you were really good at educating folks in concise answers of, you know, we're just starting. We're going to need 34 states, and, you know, at that point, we only had three that had even gone through the whole process. And a lot of people, obviously the enthusiasm's there, but you were very effective, and you continue to be effective at focusing people on, this is a long process, and we're just getting started, but jump on in. And I know you would post the map of and the color-coded map of the states, and color-coding, mm-hmm. here's the ones who passed it, here's where we filed, you know, here's where it's pending in one house or the other, and very helpful to see that. So that's where I first came across you, and that's why I ended up friending you on Facebook and eventually contacted you for this interview. So that was a long soliloquy on my part. Florida, they passed it. They've passed the resolution. So what are you guys doing now? Because you've already passed it. So what's the convention of states doing in Florida? Because
we're done here in Florida. We were the third state. We passed it back in April 2014. Georgia beat us by about a month, and Alaska beat us by a couple days. So right now what we've been doing is we continue to educate our citizens down here. You know, the more people that we get behind this, you know, not just in each individual state, but nationally, you know, it carries a lot of weight that we can continue to tell people about this so that they can educate more people. The more and more we do this, our grassroots army is going to swell, and the pressure is going to be put on these other states. So we've been doing that. This past year, I've done several volunteer events. Here in Tampa, I worked with one of our local district captains at a 4th of July event where we were signing people up at a 4th of July parade. We had a booth set up. We were talking to them about this process, and it was really exciting to see so many people, you know, especially on the 4th of July, you know, everybody's got their patriotism out, and we were getting people to sign up, and they were like, yeah, that sounds great. I also went to the 9/12 Freedom Works convention over in Orlando. We were signing people up there. So that's one thing that we're really doing. The other thing we're doing is we're holding mock conventions here in Florida. Back in July, we had a mock convention here in Tampa, and this past October, we had another mock convention down in, I want to say Fort Lauderdale, somewhere down there. I wasn't able to attend that one, but I did go to the one here in Tampa, and it was a great experience. Last thing is, even though we are done officially, we're still keeping in contact with our state representatives, you know, letting them know this is something we're very passionate about. It wasn't just a flash in the pan, hey, pass this and, you know, we'll forget about it next year. No, we're staying with them. We're continuing to talk to them, especially since we have one very liberal representative here in Florida who last year tried to repeal all of Florida's Article 5 applications, not just the Convention of States application, but also the balanced budget amendments that have been around since the 70s. We also passed one recently dealing with term limits, even though that's under Convention of States, but she wanted to try and repeal all of them. So we were, we got on the phones, lit up the Capitol switchboard and told them to shut it down, and, you know, they did. So we're having to keep our eyes out for that sort of stuff as well.
I was actually going to follow up with some of that. I want to your mock convention in a minute, but I just still wanted to stay on Florida, stirring up, educating, and the long picture, the big picture is once we get 34 states, then we have a convention, then we got to go through ratification. So it's a long game we have to play, and we can't just go away. And the good news is Florida's not going away. I know I've spoken with some folks in Georgia. They aren't going away, even though they've passed it. I don't happen to know anybody in Alaska, so I haven't talked to anybody there, and I haven't talked to anybody in Alabama yet. But obviously our groundswell of support is continuing to build. The ads on the Levin radio show have really, really propelled us immensely here in Texas. We're having a hard time keeping up with folks. Good. Now, I don't know if you've heard this, but it was announced at ALEC, whenever that was held, last week. I think that was last week in San Diego. Kind of based on what you've done with your mock conventions in Florida, the Convention of States Project plans on having a national mock convention, and I believe they want state legislators involved when they do it sometime this coming year in 2016. They don't have everything worked out. But I would like you to flesh out that convention that you went to, the mock convention. First of all, what is it? Kind of explain to folks what your intentions were, how that worked out, how long it took, and just kind of walk through some of that. I find this fascinating and something we want to do here in Texas.
Yeah, it was a great experience. I was contacted by our state director about this mock convention that they were going to do here in Tampa. And honestly, at first, I was a bit hesitant about it. The idea of having a mock convention, what they wanted to do is they want to simulate what a real convention would run like. You know, we'd go through the process and everything. And at first, I was a bit hesitant. I was thinking, we'll have a bunch of like-minded people all in the room, and we'll pull out Mark Levin's Liberty Amendments, and we'll all just, you know, sign off on the Liberty Amendments, and we'll have, you know, we'll be in and out in no time and everything. But it was shocking, surprising that even among what was a mostly conservative group of people, we had about 30 people who participated in the event, and we had a wide variety of ideas and passions about what was most important and coming from different perspectives. We had young people, old people. While most of us were Floridians, we did have a couple people from Colorado and California who actually flew down here and participated with us. So it was a really great experience where we went through all of basically the steps of what a convention would do. We got up, we proposed ideas of what amendments we should draft. Then once we had a full list, I think we ended up with, I want to say like 70 ideas. It was incredible. They were expecting like 30. We ended up doubling that. So we exceeded all expectations. So then we took that list and we started whittling down stuff. Okay, these two are so similar, we'll combine them together, and we would draft an amendment. Well, then we'd take that amendment, we'd go back to the floor, and we would debate the language of it. We'd look and see, okay, well, if we word it this way, that really doesn't work. So we'd try it a different way. And then once we had, I think we ended up with 10 fully drafted amendments, and in the end, we selected 6 that we would consider our package to be sent to the state legislatures. And we ended up with differing, I think we ended up with a balanced budget amendment. We ended up with term limits for the Supreme Court, term limits for Congress. So it was a really, and they were not duplicates of Mark Levin's amendments, which is the best part, is these were our own ideas that we sat down and wrote out on our own. So it was a really great experience to see how this process plays out. And it took us 3 days total. And it probably could have taken us another 2 days if we really wanted to get through everything we proposed. So it was an incredible, definitely eye-opening experience as to what a convention of states would look like.
All right. I'm going to have a couple follow-ups. So first of all, what I find formative and what I've always told people is you ended up with amendments which didn't look like anything which anybody had actually read, right, from Mark Levin's book or anyone else. And I always contend that I don't think we have yet to see what one of those actual amendments, the actual wording is going to look like. Maybe something close, because what you've said is you're going to get people with different ideas, different phrasing, and that's going to be good because you want that to work out. So I've got at least one structural question. I have two, actually. Did you, first of all, start the convention trying to agree to a rule set, or was that prescribed as to part of the mock convention?
As part of the mock convention, what we did was we agreed to follow Robert's Rules of Order, which is a general, legislative rule book that's pretty much agreed upon. That way we didn't have to go through that initial process of a convention. Because when a real convention convenes, they will have to adopt their own rules and they will make their own their own rules that are slightly different, but fairly similar to Robert's rules. I think Congress operates off of a slightly adjusted version of Robert's rules. So that's what we use as our base to follow.
Okay, and I understand that because for the general public, that's a more understandable means. I know that the actual proposed draft rules that the conventional states have actually use, I think they're called Mason's rules, which a majority of state legislators and legislatures and I think Congress use, and they're specifically for that. But to the rules, did you discuss at all there the one state, one vote rule, or were you even functioning in that way in which you had different state delegations represented?
We did. We did have a one state, one vote rule. The 30 volunteers that we that were participating were randomly assigned to different states. So I was selected as a representative of Pennsylvania, and there were five of us, and we had, you know, five people represent Florida, five people represent Alaska. We had the three that had already passed, or the four that had already passed the resolution. So we had Alabama, Alaska, Florida, and Georgia represented, and then we picked some other ones. We had Pennsylvania, we had New Hampshire, and so I think we ended up with seven states total was what we had present. That way it was an odd number. And we would go by one vote, one rule. And within each state of the five members, we would occasionally convene together, and we would have to decide between the five of us, how are we going to go? And sometimes it was a quick, unanimous five yays, Pennsylvania's on board. But other times we had, you know, 3-2 decisions where we don't really like this, and we would have to discuss for a couple minutes to figure out what we wanted to do, what was best. And you could also, and part of that experience also led to coalition building. Several of the states started to pair up because delegates saw eye to eye so much on certain issues. My state, like I said, I mock represented Pennsylvania, and the table next to us was Massachusetts, and we saw eye to eye on a lot of things in terms of what was being proposed. And then there was Georgia and Alaska were right next to each other, and they saw a lot of things eye to eye. And there were a couple times that, you know, the two parties, I guess you could say, were at odds. So it did create conflict, and we would have to work through our issues. And that's what really was great about the experience, was seeing how differences can be worked through in a legislative process. And that, you know, there's no way to just ramrod something through or to completely throw this process off. It's almost hard to describe into words. I can't even properly give it justice to see. It's something you almost have to experience in order to fully understand and comprehend.
A little more about the structure, because you ended up with, and I think you did post on Facebook that the number was in the 70s, the number of amendments.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you had like small committees that would meet to draft amendments. Did they do it by, if they did that, did they do that by some type of subject matter and kind of dole out the different ideas that way? How did you end up getting 70?
When we initially started the convention, we opened the floor up to all the delegates, and we would go up and we would present our idea for an amendment. Didn't have to be fully formed. It just had to be the rough idea. And that would be written down by our secretary. And she was amazing, just to give her kudos to Vicky, if she's listening. She was amazing. From there, what we did was we divided up the 75, I think it was. I'm looking at my notes now. We had 75 proposed amendments. And we divided up into three committees. Now, each committee was comprised of somebody from the different states. That way, each state was represented in each committee. And what we did from there was we had a judicial committee, which handled any bill that would affect the third branch of the Article III, the judiciary, the Supreme Court. We had one for the legislative, one for the executive. And then we also had depending on the volume, some of the other subjects would go in there, such as dealing with budget. I think the budget went in under the judiciary because it was there weren't too many under the judiciary. So we divided up as evenly as possible. And those subcommittees are what we call the drafting committees, then spent the better part of a day drafting amendments out of the list of, they had 25 amendments each roughly, and they whittled it down, and I think all the committees came back with probably about 6 or 7 amendments.
Well, I look forward to Texas trying to do this, and I certainly look forward to see what happens when the National Convention of States Project attempts to do one of these. Sometime in the middle of next year is what I'm anticipating what they're going to do. So what have you learned that you want to share with others, especially as a volunteer? What is terrific about having you on is you're not somebody who's attached to a legislator. You're not somebody who's actually working in what's in a true leadership position in the Convention of States Project, but you're one of the many people we really, really need on the ground doing a lot of the work which you've already described, which I hope has given some other folks who are listening some great ideas when they say, you know, I want to volunteer, what do I do? Well, do what Stuart's doing, man. Get out to those events, get out to the whatever event's held, the parade or the festival or whatever, do that. But what have you learned that you want to share about being involved with the Convention of States Project? Some of the things you've learned that are great and some of the things you want to avoid, if you've found any of those.
I mean, I would say the two things that I've learned most would be, first and foremost, would be educate yourself. Educate yourself, because you need to be able to understand what this process is. You know, an informed electorate is the best electorate. So having everyone be able to explain this, not only to understand themselves, but also so that they could explain it well to their state representatives when they meet with them, call them, write them, as well as be able to pass this knowledge on to their community, being able to explain to their neighbors and their coworkers what this is, and so that they can understand it. And this ties into the second thing that I've learned is don't let fear immobilize you. I mean, having been on social media so much, I've seen pretty much all the arguments made against Article 5. And I would say almost all of them are based off of two things. They're either uninformed or misinformed about what Article 5 actually is, or they let their imagination get the better of them. They're like, oh, well, they'll repeal the Second Amendment, but then when you break it down and realize, you know, the chances of them, as Michael Ferris often says, you know, the chances of the Second Amendment being repealed are about as good as him being appointed to the Supreme Court by Barack Obama. It's just not going to happen. It's, you know, there's the theoretical and then there's reality, and they're letting the theoretical and their imagination get better of them. And that's where, again, education. It's probably because I'm a history major right now and I'm in school that I'm so into the education part. But it really is just the cornerstone of what our movement is right now, because we're in that phase where we're getting some of the state legislators aboard, but the big hurdle is getting enough people informed about this and teaching them and explaining to them what needs to be done and what, you know, they can do to make it happen. And I'd say the final thing that I've really learned about this is, and you've alluded to it and talked about it several times, is that this is going to be a lengthy process, and it was designed that way by our founders. They didn't want, and this ties into the whole framework of the Constitution, they didn't want, you know, fleeting, flash-in-the-pan movements to dictate the way this country moved. So they wanted, that's why they created such high hurdles for the states to have to clear in order to change the Constitution. So oftentimes I hear people say, well, what's taking so long? Why is it not done? I've heard about this for 2 years and you're not doing anything. And, you know, you have to sit down with them and explain. Well, first we have to get the state representatives on board, have to explain what their role is, what their powers are, and why this is important now. then we have to do that in 35 or 33 other states. Getting 34 states to agree to anything is a monumental task. Then we have the actual process of, okay, they have to select legislature or delegates to the convention. Then the convention actually has to be organized and take place. Then the states have to convene again to ratify the amendments. So this is a process that's going to take several years. And the other part about it is a lot of people are looking at this as how to take out Barack Obama. And while, you know, many of us can agree with those sentiments, you know, and disagree with our president, the goal is much bigger than Obama. And it's dealing with the systemic problems that have plagued our country for several decades and have been caused by both parties. So you have to, again, educate people about what our goals are and what the end game of this is. And being, again, the history major here, I often turn to the opening paragraph of Thomas Paine's The Crisis. You know, he talks about the summer soldier and the sunshine patriot shrinking, and that, you know, tyranny like hell is not easily conquered. And that's what we're going up against. This is not something that's going to happen in 1 year. This is going to take 3-4 more years possibly before it's actually done. And people have to have the resolve and the strength to see this through to the end if they want to see the country survive.
I am really, really impressed. When do you graduate?
I graduate in the spring. I got one
All
semester
right.
to go.
We got to get you. I know you're already way involved. We got to get you on board doing something somewhere. You're fantastic.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well,
I do plan once I graduate in the spring, when I have more time available, to become a district captain here in my district. Hopefully I'm still in Florida, but, you know, I got to see where my career takes me. But, you know, wherever I end up, I'm going to stay involved and keep pounding the pavement. My goal is to work with the National Park Service, as kind of ironic as that is, and I'd love to work in Fort Sumter or Chattanooga, Chickamauga. So that would take me somewhere where we definitely need the help. You know, Tennessee and South Carolina haven't joined yet. So hopefully, maybe we'll join next year, but we'll see.
Really appreciate your time. Appreciate it so much. We'll be following you on Facebook and on Twitter, and I'm sure we're going to see you posting quite a bit once we have another flurry here coming up in January and February.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting ready for that. I have a spreadsheet on my computer that I actually have all of the legislation numbers and everything. I'm still boiling over what happened in Texas this year.
Well, take someone who is actually sitting there watching that, and we have a good battle plan. Now, we aren't involved this year. We got a whole another year to plan. Unless we have a special session, there's an outside possibility of that. But we're not counting on that. But the good news is we were off to such a late start last year. I explained that to everybody about Convention States. We've actually done remarkable things considering we've only been around for 2 years.
Oh, absolutely.
Look at how much
we've
already accomplished. It's unprecedented what's going on, and the wave is just continuing to build.
Yeah.
Stuart,
yeah, that,
again,
what thank happened
you
so Memorial Day
much.
Was an absolute travesty.
It was. We'll see if we can avoid that. I think we can. We're going to work. You know, one of those senators is gone. He decided to retire almost immediately.
Been a pleasure, Paul.
That's all I got, Stuart. I appreciate this so much. Thanks, Stuart.
Sounds good. Have a good one, Paul.
All right.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks.